I'm John Kroll. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, a time when we Americans pay tribute to those who defend this nation. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the nature of service to one's country and the meaning of this holiday. My guests will be two people who wear the uniform of the United States Army Reserve, Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, and we're going to mark the occasion by talking to two people who wear the uniform of the United States Army Reserve. They are Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson. Welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have both of you here. And I would like to say to our listeners, if you'd like to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'm going to start, and this is a simple question, but given that tomorrow is Veterans Day, I'm going to start with you, Sergeant Long, and ask, what does Veterans Day mean to you?
Well, I join you today as a proud member of the Army Reserves, a combat veteran of Operation Enduring Freedom with 7 years of service and an American citizen. I want to thank my brothers and sisters in arms that I am honored to serve with. They are all a part of my family. Veterans Day, to me, means more than just honoring the fallen comrades and our active duty and Army Reserve personnel. It's honoring the families and the community and the country who support us as well.
How about you, Sergeant Major?
Veterans Day for me is just a time to pause and reflect on our great nation and the contributions that all service members of all components of the military have made to our nation.
I'm going to stay with you for a second. I always find people's personal stories fascinating. What led you to the Army Reserve? What brought you to this point in your life and to deciding that you were going to dedicate some portion of your life to serving your country?
Well, my story is simple, and it's probably not unique, but I was an 18-year-old in the city of Chicago, and I really didn't have a plan for my future. And I had a cousin stand with me that was a couple years older, and she had been flirting with the possibility of going into the military. So this Army Reserve recruiter had been calling our house constantly, trying to nail her down, if you will, to go take the test and things of that nature. And I'd answered a call a couple times, and she was never around when he called. So finally one day he says, well, who are you and how old are you? And so I told him who I was and how old I was, and he asked me had I ever considered joining the military, and I said, honestly, no, I hadn't. And we talked for a little while, and next thing I know, I was taking the test, and 30 years later, here I am.
What did he say to you that was so persuasive? I mean, if you hadn't been thinking about it.
Well, for an 18-year-old kid, he probably says something like, we have some college benefits and we can give you a cash bonus of a few $1,000s. And, you know, that got my attention pretty quickly.
Okay, so 30 years ago would have been mid-80s?
1985 to be exact.
So it is exactly 30 years ago. Then.
Yes, sir.
Right. And, you know, that was a time, obviously, Reagan era America. Was it just the incentives, the college, cash bonuses and all of that, or was part of the appeal serving your country?
That was a part of it, but I think the biggest part was purpose. A purpose for an 18-year-old that didn't have a plan, as I addressed before, and it gave me purpose and meaning, and it gave me at least some direction that I would pursue for a few months of that year. And what I mean by that, being an Army reservist, which I've been my entire career, it was basically 2 months of basic training and maybe 3 months of my job specialty after that, which put me into the summer of 1985. And then from there, I joined an Army Reserve unit, and I met a bunch of wonderful people, and they always become your second family, if you will. So I think going back to my original point, it gave me purpose and some direction.
Sergeant Long, what led you to this point? I mean, did you originally plan to make the military part of your life, or how did that come about?
When I was a young girl, I actually dreamed of being a singer or an actress. Okay. I didn't wake up and say I wanted to be a soldier. I was in college, and a recruiter came to me and talked to me about, the possibility of joining the military, the Army Reserves exact, with benefits of receiving stipends for college on a monthly basis, as well as a bonus. And that's what really got me into the military, seeing as though I was already in college. I did not have a lot of military personnel in my family, so I wasn't very familiar with what it means to be patriotic. Mm-hmm. However, after going through basic training and my job specialty school and experiencing the camaraderie with my fellow comrades, I began to get a sense of what it means to be a soldier and a true American who bears faith in the Constitution and the flag.
Where were you going to college?
Stephen F. Austin State University. It's actually located in a small town called Nacogdoches in Texas.
Okay. So, and are you from Texas originally?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. You can call me John.
John.
Okay. I will use your titles, but
I'm call you John.
I'm John. I'm John. Everybody can call me John. It's a friendly show. What were you studying when you were in college?
Believe it or not, I was studying communications, radio, TV.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah. This was a rather indirect path to get here, I guess. But, when you joined the Army Reserve and became a reservist, I'm going to ask each of you this. How did it change your lives? I mean, what I'm picking up from both of you is that it's not like you were on the wrong direction as much as it was there really wasn't a direction. I think the sergeant major referred to a lack of purpose or not having a purpose. How did the being part of the military change that? Sergeant Long, I'll continue with you.
Okay. Well, I was never really lost. I always felt like I had a purpose. I just didn't know what that purpose was. I always felt like I had a solid foundation within myself and the things around me. But I did need discipline. I did need structure. The simple things that most adolescents need in life. And I took it upon myself to use the military to help me gain those characteristics that I needed to be a successful citizen in society.
Okay. Sergeant Major Simpson, how did the military change you?
Well, I felt like I was always disciplined, so I wasn't really looking for that. I think it gave me a sense of belonging, not only to a community, but a larger sense of belonging to the nation, if you will, and the purpose of defending the Constitution. And it helped me see the big picture in life instead of just the neighborhood that I grew up in Chicago. It allowed me to meet people from all over the country and in some cases all over the world, which I may not have been exposed to if it wasn't for the military. With that came some traveling, and it just opened my eyes to how, as Americans, we vary in so many ways just based on sometimes our geographics and the beliefs from the areas that we're in. And so it just opened my eyes and made me a more rounded person, if you will.
When you say that that there are differences based on the place we come from, what do you mean by that? Because that has classically been an argument for military service, is that it sort of completed the melting in the melting pot.
Yeah.
And brought us all together.
Well, I would say that most of us have things in common. However, meeting another 18-year-old from Idaho or Wyoming or from Texas, as my fellow soldiers from, we just do things different. For example, I'm a city boy, but you know, I might meet someone from Texas or Idaho that does fishing and farming or hunting and things like that. And those things intrigue me, and that piques my interest when I meet people like that, and I want to talk to them about their experience. Because I've never done those things, believe it or not.
If you are just joining us, we are commemorating Veterans Day, which is tomorrow, by talking to two members of the U.S. Army Reserve, Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I probably ought to ask this question because it is, what is the, I'll put it simply, it's a question I think that confuses some. What is the U.S. Army Reserve? How is it different from the U.S. Army? I'll throw that one to you, Sergeant Major Simpson.
Well, thank you, sir.
You can call me John, too.
It may happen and it may not.
Okay.
All right. So the United States Army Reserves is comprised of what we call the citizen soldier. And basically what that means is that we're the citizens out in the communities, and we serve part-time in the military. Of course, back when I joined, the discussion was, you know, you do your military duty 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks for a year. Well, that's really a very old way of thinking, as we have evolved over the years to a more operational type Army Reserves. And just this month alone, I think I have 8 days of military duty scheduled, and it can vary for every month. But the Army Reserve's main purpose is to support the big army, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in the Army Reserves, we have a lot of the support operations that the big army and the National Guard would need for sustainment of life, if you will. And so while they may go and be the trigger pullers and looking for the bad guys, the Army Reserves, you know, we're the medics, the transportation people, the fuel haulers, the water folks, and make sure you get fed and so forth and so on.
Okay. I'm going to ask Sergeant Long, when you joined, you mentioned it at the beginning that you are a combat veteran, correct?
Yes.
Tell me about that. I mean, when, where were you deployed, and what was that experience like?
I deployed in 2011 to 2012 to Djibouti, Africa. It's a small country that borders Somalia. That deployment for me was a life-changing experience, one of the most life-changing experiences that I've had, hands down. To experience a new culture of people, to submerge myself within that culture, and to do humanitarian services to help those people was just an experience that is invaluable and measurable, because it goes beyond anything that I've experienced thus far.
We've got about 30 seconds before we head toward the break. What was the most eye-opening thing? Was that the first time you'd been out of the United States?
Yes.
Okay, what was the most eye-opening thing about it?
Acknowledging the difference in our way of life, our quality in life. Seeing that there were actually a race of people, if you will, within the human race, that actually they don't have anything, no clothes, no food, anything.
If you are just joining us, we are marking Veterans Day here on No Limits. My guests are Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson, both of the U.S. Army Reserve. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about service. Tomorrow, of course, is Veterans Day, the day that we honor the people who defend this nation. My guests are Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson. They are both of the U.S. Army Reserve. We have gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Michael. And I should say, if you want to reach out to us by Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Michael says, it seems that so many young people join the military for educational training benefits. So I was wondering if they could get similar education training pay and benefits from the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps or some other national service organization, if they could get those kind of benefits from those organizations. Would they choose one of those instead of going into the military and going to war? That's a fundamental, because that is part of the deal, obviously, when you sign up, is there is a good chance you're going to be put in harm's way. Sergeant Major.
Today, you have to be cognitive of the possibility of going to war. But for me personally, in 1985, when I joined the military, war was the furthest thing from my mind. I was even surprised about the amount of times we had to fire our weapons and to be become proficient and efficient at firing our weapons. I just wasn't thinking it all the way through as an 18-year-old. But an 18-year-old today, I believe that is staring them directly in the face. So I believe it's very possible that today's generation would potentially shy away from service because of the possibility, the high likelihood that there could be a war and that their service would be needed outside of this country or, in that fact, in this country. So I don't know much about the Peace Corps, but I do know that there are other employers that offer educational benefits and things of that nature. Also, I think sometimes our younger generation has a sense of a service, a sense of patriotism, and many of them today that join aren't concerned about the possibility of war. Having been in conflict like we have been since 2001, many young soldiers that I meet today volunteer for service outside of the country, and they look forward to the opportunity.
Sergeant Long, at the risk of perhaps offending Command Sergeant Major Simpson here, you appear just a bit younger than Command. So you signed up in this era when hostilities did exist, right?
Yes.
Did that give you pause at all? I mean, were you hesitant at all to sign up, knowing that there was a good chance, and obviously you have been sent into harm's way?
It was not on the forefront of my mind as much as it was on the forefront of my mother's mind.
Yeah, well, all parents, I think, will get that one.
Indeed. I had a one-set mind. You know, I had a goal. I had priorities, and I wanted to reach them. I wasn't focused on going to war or anything like that because I had a goal and that's what I focused on. And when I volunteered or when I sweared in, I realized that I was defending the Constitution under any means necessary. You know, and that was one thing that I really had to understand. It's not about going to war. It's not about sitting behind a desk. Regardless of whether I'm overseas or I'm at home, I'm still defending my Constitution. And that's what I wear my uniform for. So, and just to answer that question, as regarding the Peace Corps, the Marine Corps, the Army Reserve, we all have different cultures, just like Sergeant Major was saying earlier, you know, and that's what makes, you know, the armed forces so great because, you know, you will meet, you can meet a soldier from Chicago, you know, from Texas or what have you. And with that being said, there's also different cultures within the armed forces. The Army's culture is different from the Air Force's culture, which is different from the Navy's culture, which is different from the Marine Corps' culture. And it's about finding the culture that suits you best.
So, and I, this gives me, actually, you've set me up beautifully here, Sergeant Long. Right before we went live with this broadcast, you know, our board operator, Joe Hatcher. Joe, if you want to pull your microphone up and go live. George, Joe served 4 years, and he said, you know, basically that the Air Force is covering you today here on the board.
Joe, I think what I said was you're on the air with the Air Force.
Okay. So, Joe, how long did you serve?
20 years.
What pulled you in?
Well, it was 1975. The economy was bad. I was looking for...
of course, Vietnam had just wrapped
up. Vietnam had just wrapped up. But, you know, I was in during the Cold War, and I came in right after the draft ended. And, you know, my dad and all his brothers, all my uncles had been in the military. My grandfather had been in the military. And it was just something that you did back in those days, you know. And for me, it was, you know, I just sort of thought I'd be doing some time in the military. So, you know, I joined the Air Force in 75, and it was actually so much fun. I stayed for 20 years.
So I want to pick up on Sergeant Long's point. It's each branch of the military, you say, has its own culture. What makes those cultures different? I mean, I'll start with Sergeant Major Simpson. What defines the Army's culture as opposed to the Air Force's or the Marines or the Navy's?
Well, that's a tough question, particularly for me, because I've always been in the Army Reserves. I've never served in any other component of the military. And we all have our beliefs, what we think about the other services. But I don't know that they're facts, to be exact. But I think just the mere mention of our different missions, if you will, could lead to different cultures. I think when most people think of the Air Force, they think of air power. And in the Army, we jokingly say that the Air Force has a better quality of life type culture. They tend to have better facilities, better equipment, and I don't know if that's associated with how they're funded or what have you. But they look at us as kind of like the grunts of the military. The Army, they think we have a very hard life as compared to theirs. But, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of the different services, but I think the mission on the Marine Corps itself makes their culture different. The mission of the Navy. And, you know, the Army has a lot of the components that many of the other services have. We have a lot of aircraft. We have a lot of watercraft that's associated mostly with Navy, or the aircraft associated mostly with the Air Force. So we do all those things as well. We're just not known for it because our mission isn't in those areas. It's not as large a piece for that the Navy and the Air Force would have. So, sorry about that. So it's really difficult for me to say, But I do know service members that served in multiple branches.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could probably answer that question very well.
Might be easier for me to ask the guy who's been out for a while. What do you see as the differences, Joe?
Well, I think the Sergeant Major hit it right on the head when he said it's the mission.
Yeah.
Different missions make for different culture. But when it comes right down to it, what Sergeant Long said, you're all in there for the same reason. You're defending the Constitution of the United States. We all take that oath.
Yeah.
First thing you do, and every time you reenlist, you take that oath. And, you know, it's kind of bracing to put your hand up and stand before a flag and swear that you're going to lay down your life, if necessary, to protect the Constitution of the United States. You're not doing it for a king. You're not doing it for an individual ruler. You're doing it for the concept, the idea that you know, what the United States is founded on. And I had the privilege. I was in the Air Force for 20 years, but my last 10 years, I spent working either for the Army or with the Army. And you know, lived on an Army base in Panama, you know. And you know, we joke about our differences and we make fun of each other. You know, there are all kinds of stories that, you know, we could tell. Some of them we can't tell because of the language, because that's part of military culture too. But I think, you know, you scratch underneath, you know, and all of us are bleeding red, white, and blue. You know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the Marines I served with at Fort Harrison, the Defense Information School, and the Navy guys, the Army. You know, I had one of my greatest commanders was an Army Lieutenant Colonel. You know, so we joke, but really, there's not a lot of difference when it comes down to why we do what we do.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're doing a show in anticipation of Veterans Day tomorrow, and we're talking about the nature of military service. My guests are Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson, both of the U.S. Army Reserve, and we're also talking with our longtime board operator here, my partner in crime, who is an Air Force veteran. So I think there's a different way for me to get at this than where I was going to go. Sergeant Long?
Yes.
Tell me the best Air Force joke you've ever heard that will not get me in trouble with the FCC, okay? That will not, which means no dirty words.
If you want to go there, John, I can do that.
All right. Well, that's what I want. Yeah. And then I'm going to give Joe a chance to respond with the best Army joke.
Okay. The best Air Force joke I heard was, if it smells clean, it's clean. You know, we're used to area beautification when, and Sergeant Major can tell you all about that, when our grass isn't 2 inches. You know, it's more than just if it smells clean. It has to be clean, you know. We don't go and run through things, but that's just one of the things that we joke about as far as our different cultures or what have you. I know the values that we live by in the Army. And I'm not sure if they incorporate the exact same values in the Air Force, but we live by leadership, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. So that helps our culture. Well, that helps define one of the aspects of our culture.
Okay. And Joe, I'll give you a chance to talk about the Air Force's values too, but I want to hear the best Army joke.
Well, it's not so much an Army joke, okay. But the Army's involved.
Okay.
Okay. I had four services are standing around talking, and the Air Force says, we know the Air Force mascot's a falcon. It's a swift bird of prey, mm-hmm. You know, and kind of indicative of what our service does. And asked the Army guy, what's your mascot? And he says, well, it's the Army mule, you know. It's a very sturdy land animal, you know, and can carry heavy loads over long distances, you know, somebody you really want with you when things are tough. And then they asked the Navy, so what's the Navy mascot? And he said, well, it's the Marine Corps. It's the Marine Corps.
Cool.
So how'd that happen? So the Army got first pick. And that's the only one I'm going to tell. And sorry to all my Marine friends out there.
Okay, well, that'll get the switchboard lit up, I think.
Well, you may have opened the can of worms that you don't want to go into, John.
I very well may have. So, but I also promise that you get a chance to talk about what the Air Force's values were.
Well, you know, oddly enough, they mirror the Army values. And see, the Air Force was a part of the Army until 1947 when it became its own service. And, you know, we share a common language, you know. When you go to the bathroom, you go to the latrine in the Army and the Air Force. And having worked with Navy guys and Marines, it's the head, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got their own language, but a lot of our tradition comes from the Army. And the values as well, with the number one being integrity. It's very important in the Air Force and in the Army as well. So, yeah. What Sergeant Long said.
If you'd like to join this conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Gary did and reach out to us via Facebook. Find us there at nolimits@wfyi. Gary says, which I echo, thank you for all the veterans have done. And then his question is, are those required to expatriate to survive today any less in the eyes of the veteran? They have to leave the country, I guess. Gary, if you have further clarification, but it sounds like if there are people who leave the country with a disagreement or whatever, do you still consider them citizens worth defending? I'll throw that one to you first, Sergeant Major.
Quite honestly, I didn't catch that. Can you repeat that?
Well, he's saying, are those required to expatriate, which would mean leave the country, leave an expatriate existence, to survive today any less in the eyes of the veteran?
A simple response would be no, but I would need more details to give a personal opinion on something like that. However, if we had a mission to go out and support people that fall in that category, I tell you we'd do it. And, you know, we'd follow our orders and we try to bring them out of harm's way if that was their situation.
And I've asked questions of all of you here about why you joined. I think this is a different one, and I'll start with Sergeant Long on this one. Why did you stay?
The impact that it had on my life was so monumental. I wasn't aware of the camaraderie. You know, I wasn't aware that that type of camaraderie existed in the world. I'm a loner. I'm an introvert. And I didn't know really what it meant to go someplace where you're in harm's way and trust someone else with your life and actually be aware that they trust you. They have that exact same trust in you. And you know that connection, that friendship, that camaraderie will never fade, will never dissipate, regardless of whether that service member is in the Army or in the service or no longer serving. That's something that never goes away. And I still have a lot of friends that are no longer in the Army. But that's one of the reasons that I stayed, because the family-like nature is just incomparable.
Sergeant Major, why did you stay?
I don't think I could say it any better than Sergeant Long. I think she summarized how I feel as well. But the sense of belonging to a team, having that second family, if you will, was very, very powerful for me. And then there's some other technical reasons why I stayed, and my story is different from others. But I was fortunate enough to land employment opportunity with the Army Reserves. And so basically I'm considered a Department Army civilian, and I've been doing that since 1987. And as a result of landing that employment, the law says for the type of job that I have to be in the Army Reserves. And so I enjoy what I do as a civilian with the Army Reserves. And as long as I want to work for the Army Reserves as a civilian, I have to stay in the Army Reserves.
Well, I can see that the phone lines are starting to light up. I am going to set a rule, and I'm going to ask Joe his reason for staying when we get back from the break. But I'm going to set a rule for all of the callers. There is a limit of one joke about another branch of the service per caller. And we will continue this discussion after the break. We are talking about the nature of military service in anticipation of Veterans Day. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. In anticipation of Veterans Day, we are talking with three veterans, Sergeant Lynn Long and Command Sergeant Major Edward Simpson, both of the U.S. Army Reserve, and my partner in crime, guy who makes the show run, the board up, who is a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Air Force, Joe Hatcher. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Mary has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to remark about how this day started. This used to be called Armistice Day because it was the day that World War One ended. In the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. And at that, at 11 in the morning when I was in grade school, we all had to stand and have a moment of silence in remembrance of all those who had died in World War One. And that was how we celebrated that day. And I guess it became Veterans Day during the Eisenhower administration. Up until then, it was called Armistice Day.
Mm-hmm. It was indeed, and I remember my late friend Kurt Vonnegut at the beginning of his book Slaughterhouse-Five says that the silence that occurred when the hostility ceased was as close as you're likely to hear to the voice of God. That sound of peace. Thank you very much for the call and the comment.
Well, I just thought we ought to remember what this day was in the beginning. So
yes, thank you very much for the call and the comment. Do we do enough? I'm going to ask all three of you this. Do we do enough to pay our respects? Because the things we ask of people who wear the uniform often can be horrific. I mean, they see things that in many ways, and have to experience things that in many ways are inhuman, or the worst that humanity has to offer. Do we do enough to honor that service and that sacrifice? Sergeant Major Simpson, I'm going to throw that one to you first because you made the mistake of making eye contact with me at the wrong moment.
Yes, sir. So I believe over the years, most recently, at least my experience has been maybe in this century, and especially since 9/11, Veterans Day has taken on a whole new meaning for me and what I've experienced. And I think the caller was right in terms of how we used to recognize Veterans Day, maybe on a lesser scale. But I think now is being recognized on a scale larger than I ever expected. And I think every year we do more and more. And I say we intentionally because I also honor the veterans. And I want to thank our 20-year Air Force veteran in the room for his years of service. I haven't had an opportunity to do that yet. But it has taken on a new meaning. I think it's awesome. And I don't want to speak for other service members, but I feel like the majority of us actually like recognition that's kind of low scale and behind the scene. We didn't join the military just so we can be recognized as veterans later on in life, and that's something that most of us don't think about. And a simple thank you is usually all that we expect. Or sometimes we don't even expect it, but we appreciate it. But I think as a nation, there's been a lot of positive movement to recognize and celebrate Veterans Day.
To be fair to Mary and her call, and I'll throw this one Joe's way, I think what she was saying, Armistice Day started out, it was supposed to be a reminder of just how horrible war can be.
Oh, absolutely.
How cautious we ought to be about sending our, you know, just because you put on a uniform doesn't mean you stop being our fellow citizens. How cautious we ought to be about sending our fellow citizens into harm's way, doing that, you know, is there enough consideration to what we are asking of these people, Joe?
Wow.
Tough question, I
yes.
know.
Well, you know, there's a difference between what happened in World War One and what's going on now in that there was a draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, Armistice Day was a remembrance of peace. As Mary said, during the Eisenhower administration, the shift was from armistice to veterans. And nowadays, the people that are in the armed forces are here because that's what they've chosen to do. I can't speak for all of them. All I can say was I considered it a privilege to be able to serve my country in my uniform. And so, you know, I'm pretty humbled when somebody says thank you because, you know, no, thank you for letting me do it, for being able to stand up for this country. And as to what our folks are doing now with the repeated deployments, and, you know, the tempo isn't as bad now as it was just a few years ago.
Yeah, where we had pretty much a backdoor.
You know, I think if you see a veteran and say thank you, they're going to be grateful for it, and they've earned it.
Yeah. And I should follow up. Why did you stay?
Well, it was just so much fun, you know, being in the military, traveling, and I had such good comrades. The folks I worked with were great, and, you know, and I you know, people that I served with, you know, back in the late 70s are still, you know, they're my top friends on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we stay in touch. We're scattered all over the place. But, you know, whenever I joke, I say, whenever I travel, I have a place to stay because I've got friends all over the country. So, there's a sense of purpose. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's a real sense that you're doing something worthwhile.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you serve with great people and you get to go to fun places. You know, my job was far from being an onerous one in the military. I was, if anybody saw Good Morning Vietnam, Adrian Cronauer, he was stationed in Crete before he went to Vietnam. I was stationed in Crete. And okay. I got to tell you, that was what they would call good duty because I was on a beach in the Mediterranean being a DJ, you know.
Where else were you stationed?
Well, some places that weren't so good. I was stationed in Greenland. my very first duty station was Sandstrom Fjord, which Sandstrom is Danish for sunshine.
Yeah.
It's called the Miami of the North because they have more days of more sunshine up there and more flying days than anywhere else in the Arctic. Now, it's not sunshine because of the temperature. New Year's Day, 1976, the wind chill was minus 110. So, and then my second overseas assignment was Thule, Greenland, which is 1,000 miles north of there. 6 months of dark, 6 months of light, that whole bit, you know.
Okay.
Got to tell you, the day was great. The night, not so much. But I also was stationed in Crete, and I was stationed in Holland, and here in Indiana at Fort Harrison, and North Carolina, Florida. And I had an assignment in Panama. I got there right after Operation Just Cause wrapped up, and I missed the Gulf War because I was down there. So then I came back to Fort Harrison and retired out there in 95.
Sergeant Major.
Back to your original question about Veterans Day and if we do enough. We have these talking points, if you will, from our public affairs office. And for those of you that can't tell, I probably ignored them up until this point. But I'd be remiss to ignore this one. And it says that supporting our soldiers and veterans requires a team approach by the Army, other government agencies, and the local community. And I want to emphasize local community because as Army reservists, we are part of that local community. And it goes on to say, let your words bring forth action. Think of their service and their sacrifice. Honor the memories of our fallen heroes. Don't just say thank you to our veterans. Show it.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the nature of service in anticipation of Veterans Day. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if Mr. Hatcher knew my dad. My dad taught journalism on Fort Harrison, and he worked in a building that was called Dimpos.
What was your father's name?
My father's name was Morton Levy.
Morton Levy?
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Denfoss, but I don't remember your dad. I'm sorry. When was he there?
It would be 1979.
Yeah, I graduated from Denfoss, went to school there in 75, and I didn't come back as an instructor until 87. So I missed him in there. But you know, hey, he was one of my fellow Denfoss instructors there.
Yeah, he instructed there for I think 4 or 5 maybe less. But
now was he in as the military or is he a civilian employee?
No, he was Air Force, regular Air Force.
Oh, Air Force, okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Nope. I'm afraid I don't know him.
Yeah, he was a reporter for Stars and Stripes during Vietnam.
Oh, cool.
And so I was just I heard that you'd worked off of Fort Harrison, so I thought I'd call him.
Yeah, I'm a Denfoss train killer and a Denfoss instructor, but I wasn't there when your dad was there, and I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to meet him. Sounds like he had a really interesting career with being a reporter in Vietnam for Stripes.
Yeah, and I recently found out that he was awarded a Medal of Valor, which I never knew anything about. And I just recently found that out, and really surprised me.
Is your I hope I'm not asking a painful question. Is your father still alive, or?
No, sir. He passed away about 12 years ago.
Okay. Well, we are sorry for your loss, and we do, through you, thank him for his service, and thank you very much for the call, David.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
So, I want to ask a question here. Given that, and I'm going to move you away from the talking points here, Sergeant Major, you do fine without them, all three of you. Suppose there is an 18-year-old who's sort of where you guys were at that point. What would you say to him or her about joining the military? Sergeant Long, I'm going to start with you. Yeah, I was going to say radio is not a good thing. Or silence is not a good thing on radio.
Indeed. So. All righty. So if you're contemplating joining the military, first understand that the military is not a charity case. That's the first thing you have to understand. You have to want to serve. It's not a decision that you make because you're in just a flat-out terrible situation or circumstance, although, you know, it has helped plenty of people. But if you don't love it or if you don't want it, then it's not going to benefit you. So do your research and read a lot and do research on what people tell you before you join. Make sure it's factual and make sure that it's really what you want to do. Because if you swear in, you are also signing a contract and you are bound to that. So just be advised and be aware and be educated.
Sergeant Major, what would you say to the 18-year-old who's standing before you and is thinking about joining?
I would tell him that it's a great opportunity. The possibilities are unlimited. You get great training in the military. There is a possibility that your services may be needed abroad, and if that's not something you want to do, then you may not want to join the military. And as Sergeant Long said, don't believe everything you hear. Do some of your own research. Don't do it because perhaps that's what a lot of people in your family did. Do it because that's what you want to do, and make sure that that's something that fits what you want as opposed to what your brother did or your uncle did or your parents.
Joe.
Yeah, they've nailed it. You know, it's like picking a career. What do you want to do? You know, military is not like any other job, but on the other hand, you know, you've got to look into it, know what, you know, what are you going to get into?
Oh, a job you can quit.
Yeah. Well, you can quit. The military is, as Sergeant Long said, you're signing a contract. You're in there. And if they say, okay, pick up and go, you know, my wife wasn't real happy when the Air Force told me to go to Greenland twice in 4 years and she had to stay in the United States. but we knew that was what we were getting into when we did it. And you know, you're going to have separations. You're going to have, you know, as, you know, the in World War II, the bomber pilots used to say it was hours of boredom punctuated by moments of terror. You know, that's it's the same deal. You know, you not everything's going to be all excitement, and it's not all going to be combat. Sometimes it's going to be pretty dull and boring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes garrison duty isn't very exciting at all. So Sergeant Long said, do your research, make sure it's really what you want to do. But as the Sergeant Major said, yeah, opportunity, sky's the limit. It's a real meritocracy. You rise or fall based upon your own ability and the work you're willing to put in.
I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call here. This one's from James. James, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Join your program.
Thanks.
And I just had a joke for y'all.
Okay, you get one. Just one.
I do. Yes, thank you.
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean, yeah. I don't need the FCC in my life.
Very clean.
Okay.
How many Vietnam veterans does it take to change a light bulb?
I have no idea.
You don't know, man. You weren't there.
Thanks very much for that call and the levity, James. I appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Okay. I'm going to ask real quickly as we wrap up here, and I'll start with Joe, maybe in 20, 30 seconds. How are you going to mark Veterans Day tomorrow?
Well, I'm going to be in contact with my veteran friends, and just, you know, we've been already looking on Facebook, talking to each other, and you know, you're always on the lookout for a guy in uniform saying thank you for your service, or a woman in uniform.
Okay. Sergeant Major.
And there's a parade, I believe, downtown.
There is. Yeah. Sergeant Major.
Well, I'll start with a prayer, and you know, as times of change, we usually, veterans or just people in general, usually text message one another a lot saying happy whatever. So there'll be a lot of that going on. And then I'll get to work because I have 4 days of military duty shortly thereafter. Well, the next day to be exact. So I'll get to work, pack up my gear, and get ready for my flight early on Thursday morning.
And report for duty. Sergeant Long, you get the last word.
All righty. I will be volunteering tomorrow at an elementary school and informing children about the armed forces. I'll also be barbecuing, and I'll go to the VA and spend a little bit of time with my Vietnam veterans. They have a soft spot in my heart.
Well, that is a wonderful last word. I want to thank all of you for being part of this show, but even more important than that, Sergeant Long, Sergeant Major Simpson, and my buddy Joe here, I'm not going to go with thank you for your service. I'm going to say thank you for your commitment to our country. Thank you for committing to keep us safe. And thank you to our audience for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting station.